My advice for entrepreneurs is definitely to level up with Shopify. The platform is just never a worry. Like, I have so many worries, but the platform is never one. I feel like Shopify really thinks about how they can optimize. It just always feels very ahead of the curve. Everything is just super easy to connect and link. They really know what we need. Time and money that is saved, I can spend on other things and on growth.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.
Welcome to Recovering Gleek, a podcast for all of your complicated feelings about the TV show Glee.
Monday, and I'll be at your door, ready to mini-sode, ready to give you what you've been missing on weekdays, what you've been waiting for.
There you go.
Yes.
After that, I can't really make the lyrics work for the podcast as easily, so we're cutting it off there halfway through a verse.
Sorry, SZA.
That song was recommended by Delaney. So
get your voice.
Thank you, Delaney.
That song reminds me of college so much. Every party I ever went to in college, we always danced to that party. I mean, to that song.
I don't think I had heard that song before.
Really?
Delaney recommended it, yeah.
It's a good
one. I'm out of that music loop, baby. What can I say? Shoot.
Well, you got to get in it. How are you today?
Truly. Oh, I feel sick. I feel stressed. By the time this episode drops, I will be in... Oh, I guess I don't announce this officially until Wednesday's episode. Yeah. I have a new job. That's why I'm leaving Friends, the musical... And it's a new job out of state. So I will be packed up and moved by the time this airs. And I am so stressed about it. I like constantly feel like I'm going to throw up.
Yeah.
Whew, here we are, baby. I got 2 days left to get everything sorted out.
Hell yeah.
And get on an airplane.
It'll be fun.
How are you doing?
I'm good. You know, I'm back in New York City, back to work, living it up, having my rights taken away, living it up. So, not very good, but I'm fine.
No.
Yeah.
That also is an added just residual anxiety. I just watching society just absolutely crumble to pieces in real time around us is not something I would recommend.
I know. I was just like all day yesterday before I went to work, was like looking at options for like long-term care. Like what's going to happen like when this happens or this happens or this happens. And I like was like thinking about like pretty drastic measures just because I was like really nervous that it wouldn't be available. Like specifically, this is probably certainly not appropriate for the podcast. But I was just like thinking about like very drastic things that I was like, I'm upset that I even have to think like this because like I'm nervous that it because something won't be available to me. I'll like be in trouble or like be persecuted or like have to do something. I mean, I'm very lucky I live in New York City, but that doesn't guarantee anything, you know?
Yeah.
And like heaven knows my family lives in Utah and heaven knows in the next 30 days. Heaven knows what's going to happen in Utah. I don't know. I'm really nervous, but that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, it's looking pretty bleak out here.
Yeah. And like, I don't know. We're just watching this show. I didn't know about what had happened yesterday. Obviously, I knew like because of the whistleblower like weeks ago. But like, I didn't know about it until after we had recorded the podcast that comes out on Wednesday. And I was just like, you know, for the last couple of days thinking about what life was like in 2012, you know, like what, and especially in regards to gun violence and how things have gotten so much worse since 2012. And then I was like, wow. And now like reproductive rights are back to the where they were in the 50s. And like, I watched this show about 2012 and we say all the time like, oh, it was a different time back then. And it's like, is it? Is it? Like, I feel like it's much worse now. I don't know.
Yeah. And inflation's up and we're all just living day to day. Yeah.
Well, I mean, genuinely talking about Glee helps. So let's talk about Glee for a second, shall we?
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. Okay. What's up, everyone? My name is Ian Allred. I'm a mini Gleek.
Hey, everyone. My name is Lena Katzer and I'm a mini Gleek.
And we're gonna take a little moment to, you know, to just distract ourselves, allow our brains a moment of hopefully some like much needed escape for a few moments before we go back to the harsh reality of life. We're gonna talk about guilty pleasures. We're gonna share your thoughts on the episode Guilty Pleasures.
Yeah. Well, let's kick things off with Enemy of the Podcast. Someone, you know him, you love him. It's Alex Allred.
Insert greeting here. I just have to say how angry it made me that in order to redeem Kitty, the writers were mean to Becca Tobin. I literally gasped when Brittany said it was weird that she made weight jokes at people when her face looked like a soccer ball. Then she made comments on her lizard ears. It pisses me off when they do that, especially in this case, because they framed it in a way where we are supposed to be like, yeah, take that, Kitty. But that's Becca we're talking about. That sucks. Also, that part where the girl is finishing up acting out her trauma in acting class killed me. I have to point out that the trauma was potty training, and she is rising from a squatting position as he speaks, which means she wasn't pretending to pee her pants. She was acting out, being potty trained on the toilet, and crying. Oh my gosh, that is so, so funny. I rewound it so many times. Okay, one more thing. I have to defend the unique as Baby Spice thing. I see the overall problem, but I also see what the writers were going for. Brittany says, without even consulting Unique, that Unique shouldn't have to be Scary Spice just because she's black, and they made a decision that therefore she will be Baby instead. I thought it was funny and so true to life how they are trying to be great allies by not locking her into her race, but they aren't actually considering her and what she wants. We can get so focused on being woke that we don't actually consider the individual. It's a behavior that I think we are all often guilty of, that I appreciated being called out on a TV show in a very oblivious teenager way. Big brother. Alex really stepping it up with adding some greetings and adding some sign-offs.
Literally. I like don't even recognize it.
Finally taking some etiquette classes, I guess.
Thank goodness. Even insert greeting here is like, at least I'm like being acknowledged when you walk in the room.
Yeah, at least I'm inserting a greeting there.
Yeah. Totally.
I went to see Alex yesterday and he had been listening to Guilty Pleasures. And that was like the first thing he said when I walked in the door is he was like, I cannot believe that it didn't occur to either of you that the unique stuff with Scary Spice was most likely supposed to be a joke. And hearing it spelled out that way. Okay, that makes sense. Do see that. And frankly, it makes more sense than like our long discussion about what are the writers going for here.
Yeah. Classic us trying to guess where the writers are coming from and being probably wrong.
And it's right under our noses the whole time.
Silly geese we are.
The concept of Brittany being like, no, Unique, you can't be Scary Spice because like that's not progressive for you to have to be the black one. And then Unique being like, no, I want to be Scary Spice. Like it's not, no one's forcing it on me. I do get that commentary. That is funny.
Yeah, that is
funny. We 100% flew over our heads.
Well, we're just two people who watch Glee. No experts. Yeah. Alex... thanks for this message. Do I have more to say about it? Oh, backing up. I agree, though. There is one thing that is like fake drama on this show that they bring up to be like, you know, Kitty is a bad person. But then when they take like Becca Tobin's real life features and like they've done with like so many of these characters, like really poke fun at them in a way that is like, you know, is that devastating or is it funny to them or is it a mixture of both? Like, I'm not sure. But it's like, these writers are such weirdos and turds. Like, I would hate to like be a character who was mean and then for them to like actually like point out something that I'm like insecure about, like my soccer ball head, you know?
Yeah. They pull that crap all the time.
Yeah.
It's gross.
Absolutely. Alex, thanks for the message. Thanks for learning to greet us when you send us a message. See you later. Up next, we have a message from Nat.
Hey, besties. Say it back.
Let's say it back.
Hi, bestie.
Hey, bestie.
It's Nat, she, they from England.
International listener!
Back to talk about a shining light in the shit show that is Glee. Blam. Now, do I, like you, want Blam to kiss? Yes. Do I also value the relationship between Blaine and Sam for the friendship we see in the show? Absolutely. The relationship they have is maybe my favorite thing about this whole show. And this episode is, in my opinion, their best. I think the main thing I enjoy about this episode is how inherently queer their plotline is. For personal context, I had the privilege of a relatively easy coming out journey throughout my later school years, surrounding myself with love from fellow community members and allies. I'm so grateful for the support they gave me, even when others and my own brain were telling me otherwise. This means that, whilst I love and cherish many of the successful queer plotlines on this show, a lot of them are not relatable to my personal experience. But experiencing shame for natural crushes on straight friends and usually being greeted with a careful rejection and reminders that it is not evil is a thing I have experienced. Best friend crushes also seem like a quintessential queer journey landmark to me, so points to them for that. There is no external shame towards Blame for his secret straight boy crush. He doesn't act in a way that proves negative stereotypes about having these feelings and is only reminded how normal his feelings are. But he does experience internal shame, an irrational feeling I'm sure many of us know all too well as queer people, even when told he is not in the wrong. Sam's reaction, whilst possibly idealistic, is exactly what Blaine needed to hear. You have nothing to apologize for, and of course I still want to be your friend. Also, him being kind of hyped about the attention is very sweet and must really soften the blow for Blaine. This is not another plotline of queer pain, which, whilst important, have and will be seen throughout this show, but it's instead a lesson to allies like Sam and a positive view for those feelings like Blaine. It may be the lowest bar in the world, but Sam seeing Blaine for the gay man that he is and being nothing but excited about it just really makes my heart happy. And Blaine not trying to change Sam is also super important. I just genuinely believe that these two love each other and make each other better, and this episode does nothing but serve both of them as characters. Not to mention them being better Glee Club leaders than Will. I'm excited for more discussions of Blam, whether good or bad, throughout the rest of the show. The end of this season is interesting. Super excited for your thoughts on the next few episodes that don't feature horrific trauma, because boy, they sure are episodes of the TV show Glee. Love ya, Nat. Nat, we're all Blam fans in this house, and I totally agree. Like, yes, you know, bisexual Sam truthers, and we want Blam to kiss, and all of that is true. But also, this storyline is so special specifically because Sam does not have an interest in Blaine and yet still loves him and cares about him and treats him with respect, which is not a dynamic that is seen super frequently in media or in the real world. So that is a very wonderful thing to see on this show.
Yeah, absolutely. It made me laugh the way you said, bisexual Sam truther, we want them to kiss. Like that's just old hat for us that we want them to kiss. And that's the caveat. And that's it's interesting too. Like we all obviously really enjoyed this, Nat. The storyline Nat did too. Like, but it also comes with the caveat of it shouldn't be here in the first place. But now that it's here, we're happy it is here.
I mean, I really like that this story, like I understand it shouldn't be here in the first place in the sense that like they should have gone with the original plan for Sam, which was to have him be queer. And I totally get that. But, you know, if they went with the original plan for Sam, I would still hope that this storyline would appear somewhere in Glee with a different character.
Absolutely, I agree.
Like, I just think this is such a nice and healthy dynamic that is in Glee's wheelhouse. It is not, you know, some social issue they're trying to, like, force into the show that doesn't fit. And also is just a healthy thing for the teenagers watching to see and learn from.
I agree. I totally agree. And especially, like, the way Nat says, like, having crushes on your straight friends and, like, friend crushes is, like, definitely it feels like a big step in the queer journey, at least in, like, my queer journey and, like, other people I've talked to. So it's like, this is just natural and it's totally okay. And I love that this isn't, like, a thing of pain in Blaine's life. It all goes well. And Sam is awesome. And so, like, straight people can watch that and see Sam and be like, yeah, it's totally not, it's totally fine. And then, you know, other people, like, queer people can watch it and be like, it's going to be okay. And I love that. And I love this whole plot. Obviously, bisexual Sam truther, they should be kissing, but I love this. And Nat, I appreciate you sending this message. Up next, we have a message from Danae.
Hey, Ian and LPC. I've been thinking lately about how this show handles good versus bad characters. It feels like the show truly reflects the morality of the show onto the characters, instead of their actions, and I don't think that works. For example, with characters that the writers see as the good guys, like Rachel, Will, and Finn, when they do good things, the writers say, see, they're good people. And then when they do bad things, the writers say, well, they didn't mean to hurt anyone, so we can just forgive them and move on immediately. And, of course, if someone has a track record of being really kind and thoughtful, it might be easier to forgive them than someone who has a history of bad behavior. But on this show, it is more so the writers just telling us, yeah, they're good people, don't worry about it, instead of actually showing us how good they are. And so I think beyond the consistency of the mean characters, I think it's just easier to root for characters who are perceived as mean or bad, like Sue, Quinn, or Santana. The show doesn't really shy away from acknowledging their mistakes and making them go through consequences. I think it gives them kind of an underdog vibe, even though the show's protagonists are supposed to be the underdogs, according to the writers. What I do think is also interesting about that is what the writers do with finding out that these characters are more liked than they may be intended. Because you get situations like Santana and Sue, where the writers clearly like that these characters work and do more with them. But then there's also characters like Terry and Quinn that either get written off or get the weirdest storylines. If I had to guess why that happened, it is that Terry and Quinn were much more involved in the Wemma and Finchel love stories respectively, and so their villainization was more important to the writers. And then, to look at how this stuff has affected characters that have come into the show later on, such as Brody. It feels like Quinn, and to a lesser degree Jesse, were still pretty well liked as characters, even as they were romantic rivals to Finchel. And so the show decided that their best choice for a new romantic rival would be to give them zero personality. After all, how could Brochel be better than Finchel if Brody was just an empty vessel of a character? He really just becomes a character for Rachel to play off of until the writers have figured out what to do with Rachel. And now that Santana has come into the New York part, Rachel has someone else to butt heads with, and so Brody can leave. So Brody needs to have some reason why he was actually terrible, and then Rachel can break up with him, and that's where the sex worker storyline comes in. I also find it interesting to consider the way they wrote Brody's secret about being a sex worker compared to Quinn's secret about who her baby's father was in season one. I feel like we were given a pretty good insight into why Quinn did what she did, even as the show was very clear, and rightfully so, on the side that this was very unfair to Finn. But this episode didn't even give Brody a chance. I hope you have an amazing week, and I can't wait until your next episode, Danae. Any Brochel in the stands in the house? Any Brochel shippers? Please raise your hand. I do wonder, like, genuinely, are there people out there who were like, my OTP is Brochel. Like, I don't want Rachel with Finn. I don't want her with Jesse. I don't want her with Quinn. I want her with Brody Weston.
He's a cute guy.
He's truly the Riley of Glee. to just drop in a Buffy the Vampire Slayer analogy real quick.
Oh my God, I had no idea who you were talking about. Riley. Totally. Like, who likes Riley? Like, who even likes Riley, let alone ships Riley with Buffy?
Mm-hmm.
And does anyone ship Brody with Rachel?
So no one that Riley. I know.
I know. Honestly, hear me out. I like Brody more than I like Riley.
I remember liking Riley in his final episode. I thought his final episode was very compelling. But up to that point, I truly hated him. So I'm probably on your side on this.
Like, Brody sucks, but at least I feel, like, compelled by him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I love this message, and I love the thought of the good versus bad characters. And, like, how it's mostly, like, the writer's perception of, like, you know, I don't know. I love this, and I think it's something to, like, keep thinking about, too. Like, I love this thought. That, like, there's a very clear line in the, like, good versus bad characters. And then they're, like, how, like, the audience will, like, perceive them. It's, like, I don't know. I'm just interested in this. I don't have anything more to add on it other than I'm very interested in it. I'm, like, trying to come up with a thought. But my thought is, this is good.
Well, I love the point that you make, Danae, about the writers trying to consistently brush under the rug bad things that the quote unquote good characters do actually makes them more unlikable.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, if you stack up, I don't know, if you stack up, like, the bad things that some of these quote unquote good characters have done against the bad things that some of the quote unquote bad characters have done, like, they're pretty equal. Or, like, the bad characters have done more crappy stuff. Like, Sue's done more crappy stuff than anyone in this show. But because the writers give her consequences and make it very clear that she's making a mistake and she's a flawed human, we all get on board the Sue train.
Totally.
Whereas when they're like, forget that Finn did that thing, we just needed it to happen for the plot, we're moving on.
Yeah.
Then it makes a lot of people uncomfortable that they're still rooting for this guy who's, you know, like, outing people and saying slurs and then never fully having to take responsibility for what he did.
Totally. All of that is so interesting, and I look forward to continuing talking about it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because we've always noticed that. We've always noticed that, like, for some reason, they don't see the bad things that Will does as, like, you know, something like a flaw in his character. It's just like, they just happen, and he didn't mean it, so move on. He's a good guy. He's a great teacher. When it's like, I don't know. I think you're, like, kind of shoving things at him because you need something to happen and he's a good guy. And then you're forgetting to, like, give this person consequences when, like, you know, Brody is meant to be an antagonist. So we're going to give him consequences immediately, you know?
Yeah.
Interesting. All of this is good. I like talking about it. Thank you, Danae. Thank you for this message. Up next, we have a message from Charlie.
Hello, Ian and LPC. Charlie here, coming to you from Boise, Idaho. I promise it's cooler than it sounds. I am here to shed a little bit of light onto why Brody is genuinely worse for lying to Rachel about doing sex work than we had even considered. I want to preface this by saying that I am completely supportive of sex workers. There's nothing inherently wrong or morally abhorrent about being a sex worker. But there are lots of aspects to consider about this particular situation. It should be noted that Brody is not doing something like OnlyFans or stripping, wherein his physical content with his physical contact with his clients is limited. He is a full-on prostitute, and although I do not know how many clients he may have, we need to consider that this opens both him and Rachel, non-consensually, up to a host of sexually transmitted diseases and infections. We don't know what form of protection, if any, Brody is using with his clients, and even condoms can fail to protect 100% of the time. I have had friends who do OnlyFans, who test themselves and anybody they may be sleeping with regularly, but this is never brought up. And in this situation, Rachel should be getting tested regularly as well, both after every new encounter Brody has and months later. As Rebecca says in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, most people don't know about the window. It's not only irresponsible to not tell her about sleeping with these people, it's dangerous, as she could contract something with real implications for her life, like HIV. It's definitely horrible to watch a sex worker be degraded and looked down on for the work that they're doing. But we need to remember that he is having a sexual relationship with Rachel where she is not aware of the risk factor she's undertaking. In many cases, that could be considered assault. Oh, and also cheating if Rachel hasn't previously agreed to it. Anyways, sorry to send you a literal novel. This is just something I feel very strongly about. I hope you both are having the best time in your respective shows. Ian, I hope doing your last show in Friends is a wonderful experience for you. And I love you both greatly. Consensual forehead kisses all around, Charlie.
Charlie, I so appreciate this message. And I think it's a good thought, too, that, like, Rachel, like, STIs are something that are absolutely, like, live withable. You know, like, if you are, like, there are treatments for so many, you can live with these and you can be okay. And, like, luckily, like, seek treatment for them and it's totally going to be okay. And there's no shame in, like, contracting an STI and none of that. And, like, absolutely. But it's also one of those things that's, like, most people don't know about the window. And if Rachel doesn't know, then she can't treat it. And then she can, like spread it, or like it can get worse, or like it can get, like, you know, like that's one of those things that you should know about that. And Brody is very irresponsible for not telling her about it. And not just irresponsible, like, you know, that's not something you do to someone you care about. Mm-hmm. And like, obviously,
I mean, that's not something you do to someone.
That's not something you do to anyone, period. Seriously. That's so right. You're so right. But like, especially someone that he loves Rachel, but he's not loving her. Like he does not, he's not acting like he loves her. He is, like, you know, being very risky for the betterment of his own gain. And I understand that this is a worthwhile job of his, but he is certainly putting Rachel at risk, and Rachel didn't know about it, and that would feel extremely violating, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's all bad. And it also just highlights that there's truly so many things that Brody did that were bad, that are justifiable reasons for Rachel to be upset with him and to break up with him. And then to see the aspects of it that Glee chooses to focus on instead of focusing on the cheating and opening up to her, opening her up to diseases and all of that. Come on, Glee. But I'm 100% team. Brody was super in the wrong for hiding this from Rachel. And this is absolutely something that you can justifiably end a relationship over.
Yeah. Sure, absolutely. Are you having a good time in Friends?
Yes, I am.
I'm glad.
Yeah, I got my last show yesterday when this drops, but tomorrow it'll be emotional. We'll see how it goes. My gosh.
It'll be fun.
The first show, when I knew that I was leaving, my first show, like, having an end date, I started getting teary-eyed during the finale, and I was like, this is a parody show about a sitcom that went off the air 20 years ago. Like, I should not be crying right now.
That's so funny.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. I love when I cry on stage. Charlie, I so appreciate this message. I'm glad to hear that Boise, Idaho is cooler than it sounds. I hope all is well. Thanks for this message. Up next, we have a message from Madison.
Howdy, partners. Listening to the podcast, and I was hit with such strong emotion, I had to pause and spit out this kind of pointless email. When you were talking about the bland macaroni art scene, and when you talked about how important it is when someone shares part of themselves to someone else, it reminded me of a huge life lesson and painful character development I went through recently. My lifelong dream is to be a writer, and I've been working on a novel for a couple years and hadn't shared the concept or anything about it to literally anyone, until I got the courage to share it to some other writer friends. One of them would unfortunately give me the first real heartbreak of my life within the week, and I was absolutely furious I was dumb enough to share my novel idea with them. Until my friend said that I was mad because sharing your art with someone makes you so vulnerable, and I was upset that someone I got the courage to share it with is no longer in my life. I stopped right there, and my entire perspective on my broken heart, my writing, and the fact that someone called me an artist shifted my entire world a little to the left. I'd never thought of my writing as art before, and I don't want to compare my writing to Sam's macaroni art, but that conversation made me see my life, this scene, and any instance of someone sharing something that they created with their heart and soul and put a piece of their self into way differently. It's so beautiful to share something that came from your brain and put it out into the world, to share that with even a small group of friends. This macaroni art scene is love. It's vulnerability. And the only thing to make it better would be a blammy kiss. This isn't much more than a word vomit to connect my life to Glee, but I really appreciate you and the show acknowledging how insanely important it is when someone shows you something that they created. If you guys consider yourselves artists too, I'm curious about your thoughts on the sentiment because it blew my whole world. Best and forehead kisses if you accept. Madison, she, her.
Madison, I love this email so much. I think it was one of my favorite parts of this episode. And, you know, a part of Guilty Pleasures that I really honestly enjoyed so much was the lesson of, like, share those parts of yourself with your friends and share those parts of yourself, because that's so amazing that you, like, especially the macaroni art, that he made that and he's got a talent for it and he, like, kept it secret. But, like, sharing that with Blaine makes them closer, and, like, Blaine sees this new thing in Sam, and Sam, you know, gets to share this thing that came from his heart. And that's amazing. And that's something to celebrate. And I'm so sorry that this person would be so mean to you when you would open yourself up to them like that. And you're not dumb for any of that. And I apologize. And I hope this, like, I hope you continue to share your art with people, because, you know, you should, and that's amazing, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, sharing stuff is frightening. Frankly, yeah. Most of the things that, like, I create tend to be funny. One, genuinely because I have, like, mm-hmm. a love for comedy, but also because the idea of writing something, like, very sincere and showing it to another person is so vulnerable that it, like, kicks in my fight or flight mm-hmm. to the point that, like, if I try and write something sincere, it starts to, like, really make me panic. And I'm like, yeah. I have to lock this away and never show it to another person as long as I live.
Yeah.
So I totally agree. Showing, like, your creation, like, something that came out of your heart, is such an intimate experience to whoever you're sharing it to. And even, like, you know, it could be a novel that you're working on, like you. It could be a painting that you're doing. Or, like, freaking, I had this computer game. I used to be way into Roller Coaster Tycoon in middle school.
Yeah.
And I would make, like, very intricate parks and show them to my family. And it was, like, if they were clearly interested in them, it was, like, so validating and made me feel, like, so good about myself and so loved. And if they clearly were, like, just doing it out of obligation, I was like, oh, I'm such an idiot. Like, sharing stuff that you pour your heart into is 100% a very, very vulnerable thing. And it can be very scary. And I also think it's important to recognize that, like, you hopefully get, you know, validating feedback, and it can really build you up and help you. But if you don't get, like, feedback that you were hoping for, you still were brave enough to open up this part of you to another person. And that's a very scary thing to do, and you should be proud of doing that.
You know, I don't, like, pardon me. I've always said, like, I wish I was, like, more of a creative person. Like, I've never, like, I don't know how to draw. I don't know how to write. I don't know how to, like, do anything. But I, like, you know, the creative parts of myself, like, come through in theater and, like, you know, I don't know, doing my makeup sometimes. Like, it's never, like, you know, real things. But, like, I have been in my life.
Those,
like,
are real things. But
you know, and I mean, those are definitely real things. when other people do them, not me. Do you know what I mean? But like, you know, I have had moments in my life where I'm like, I'm not going to invite, pardon me, like anyone to this show, you know, because I can't like take the, I can't take the pain that is opening myself up like that and being seen in a way that maybe I'm not ready to be seen and like being, rejected or like, you know, looked down upon or judged with all of that. You know what I mean? Which like, mm-hmm. then if I don't like, let's say my mom doesn't come to a show and I told her not to come and then she doesn't come to the show. I'm like, shoot, I didn't share this part. I didn't share this thing that I've been working on with someone who means so much to me. And that happens to me all the time where I like, don't people invite people to things. And then I instantly regret it, mm-hmm. you know? But it's like, no, I worked so hard on it. And even if it was like terrible, I should have shown someone that.
Yeah.
Wow. Making art is really crazy.
Yes, it is. It's very scary.
So scary. Madison, I'm so glad that you got that from this episode of Glee. Genuinely, that really makes me happy. And I wish you a long, beautiful, artistic, creative career. I wish you the best. Hey, this is us from the future. It's currently Monday, June 27th at 1:16 a.m. This episode's going to come out in a freaking hour, but we have a special email to read. And also, Ian just finished up Friends. Happy closing to you and Friends.
Thank you. So to answer, who is it that emailed us that was like, have a good last show? And then we talked about it and I was like, I don't know what that last show is going to entail. It was Charlie. Charlie emailed and said that, you know, they hoped that my last performance of Friends was great and I had nothing to say about it because it hadn't happened. But now it has happened. We're home. It was, oh my gosh. So like, you know, obviously it was sad because it was the last Friends. I also, as Janice, said happy Pride at one point because what's up? It's not only my last show, it's also Pride.
Hey, be who you want for your pride.
Don't hide. I really took your key and I threw it in the toilet and said, we're doing a new key. Anyways, the whole show was like a lot of fun and I was having a great time and... You know, obviously it was a little sad, but oh well. And then it gets to about 10 minutes from the end of the show.
Mm-hmm. It gets sappy for you at the end of the show.
Monica and Chandler have a little fight and then they make up. And then Monica starts proposing to Chandler and then she gets too emotional. She starts crying and she can't get through the proposal. And then we have a little duet. And then at the end of the duet, Chandler finishes the proposal and they get engaged. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like every night, Monica like starts crying during the proposal. But the way that she was saying it today, I was like, this isn't usually how Emily says this line.
Like, you're a little actually emotional.
She like gets, you know, choked up and looks at the ground. And then usually I go and I kneel in front of her. And she usually, as soon as I kneel, looks up at me and we make eye contact and I sing the song. And I went to kneel in front of her and she would not look up.
Sweetheart.
And I get through like the first two lyrics and then I grab her hands and she looks up and she is fully already crying. And like she was weeping the whole song. I was like, I felt it coming, but I was able to like keep it locked down mostly because I'm a robot, but also because I was like, I need to get these lyrics out. But she like, her cheeks were shiny by the end of the song. Mm. And then... Chandler, so the last scene is Thanksgiving because, you know, a friend staples that they would always do Thanksgiving episodes. And Chandler has a line where he says to everyone, he says, I'm thankful for you guys. Over the last 10 years, you've become my family who I trust and depend on. And I just want to thank you for that. And I was like, getting a little choked up when I said that. And the sound person said that she could see my eyes shining, but like no tears left my eyes, you know. And then we sing the last song. And it was still, my eyes were kind of shining, but I was keeping it together. And then the last song ends with all of us sitting in the couch in the exact positions that they're sitting in during the intro, during the theme song of Friends. And we all have the umbrellas and we do the same pose and we open the umbrellas and we're singing, "We'll be there for you, 'cause you're there for us too." And as we sang that last lyric, I was like, oh no.
You said, oh no, the dam, it's been broken.
And we opened the umbrella, and as soon as the umbrella covered my face, like, the waterworks came out. I started, like, hysterically crying. And so the audience saw us sitting on the couch, and clearly, like, I was a little emotional, but whatever, and then blackout, and then the lights come up for curtain call, and I have tears pouring down my face, and I cried all the way through curtain call.
Fun.
And that's just how it went. And then the whole cast after, like, all hugged me as we were walking off stage, and it was lovely. It was really, really nice, honestly.
That's sweet.
And I got just, like, people, like, wrote me letters, and oh, it was wonderful. It was very, very sad. I'm gonna miss that show so much.
Yeah.
Also, huge thank you to all the friends of the podcast who came to that show.
That is so awesome.
Many of you came out. It was incredible. It was so great to meet all of you. Truly, it was like one of the highlights of the show was whenever people would come and then I get to meet them after and they'd talk about how much they loved the podcast, and it was wonderful.
Totally. Well, I'm proud that you got to do that. Thanks. Really proud of you.
Thank you.
Well, happy closing.
Thank you.
We are gathered here today to celebrate Ian's closing, but also we got a sweet email that I was like, I sent Ian a screenshot and I said, any chance you'd be willing to put a last minute email in? Because it was just so sweet.
Ian was like, my suitcase to get my microphone back out so that we can record this.
Hell yeah. Well, let's hear a special message from friend of the podcast, Neil.
Hey guys, my daughter Eve loves your podcast. In fact, I think she would probably call herself a super fan. I know she has corresponded with you a few times and that you've acknowledged her worthy contributions to Glee Discourse. Anyway, Eve turns 21 on Tuesday, June 28th. We are down under, so that's Monday night where you are, but I digress. I did wonder if you'd consider maybe giving her a little shout out for her birthday on your next episode or minisode, as I can think of no better gift for her, knowing how much she genuinely loves what you guys do. Although I understand completely if it's not something you would do. Eve is a truly wonderful human being, and the life of everyone who knows her is much, much richer for having her in it. And that's a huge understatement. Plus, I just want to say a huge thank you to you both for bringing Eve so much joy. So thank you. With the warmest regards, Neil, Eve's dad.
You guys, can you believe that? Neil, you are in luck. This is absolutely something we do. Eve, happy birthday. For real.
Happy birthday,
21st.
Eve.
It's supposed to be fun turning 21. I'm so glad you're down under. Happy birthday. I love having you here. I love having you as a listener. I'm so glad that your dad contacted us to wish you a happy birthday. I hope this year brings you so much light and love. You absolutely deserve it, Eve. Oh my gosh.
Happy as a birthday, Eve. Hopefully it's better than Taylor Swift's 21st birthday. Shoot. Drama.
Oh my gosh. But I hope you have a great birthday, Eve.
Yeah.
Neil, thanks so much for sending us this message. It super put a smile on my face. And it's so nice to hear from someone who is important to her, like how awesome Eve is. So this is very sweet. I'm glad we get to celebrate with you guys just for this little moment. So happy birthday. Yeah. Have so much fun down under.
I literally thought of doing an accent when it said it in the email. And then I thought, this is too sweet. That's disrespectful.
So I did it for you. Happy birthday, Eve. Back to your regularly scheduled programming. And that's your minisode, y'all. Heyo.
Heck yeah. Let's set up this relative pitch game. I'm going first because it's an odd number episode.
Wow, we finally cracked the code. After 76 episodes, we cracked the code.
Goodness sakes. All right, we got Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go by Wham, Copacabana by Barry Manilow, Take a Look at Me Now by Phil Collins, Wannabe by the Spice Girls, My Prerogative by Bobby Brown, Creep by Radiohead, Mamma Mia by ABBA.
Okay. I think that you should sing Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
boom into my heart.
Yeah,
you send my skull sky high when your loving starts. Jitterbug into my brain.
Yeah,
it goes a bang, bang, bang till my feet do the same. But something's bugged me. Something ain't right. My best friend told me what you did last night. You left me sleeping in my bed. I was dreaming, but I should have been with you instead. Wake me up before you go, go. Don't leave me hanging on like a yo-yo. Wake me up before you go, go. I don't want to miss it when you hit that high. You put the boom, boom into my heart. Is E flat, F, E flat, A flat. And that's all that matters. Oh. There you go. So that's an F, not an E flat. So I'm a full step flat, baby.
Damn.
Oh, well. I want you to do Wannabe by the Spice Girls.
Yes. Okay. It's embarrassing if I don't get it.
Forgive my past. If you wanna get with me, better make it fast. Now don't go wasting my precious time. Get your act together, we could be just fine.
You think if you want my future is C sharp to E to F sharp. So a full step flat.
Dang.
We're on the same wavelength, baby.
Dang. Wow, the first time I've lost in a minute. Today. Yeah.
Truly, you had a long streak going there.
Wow. Well, whew. Happy to end on a Spice Girls song. That's not embarrassing at all for me. Just got it. It's okay. Well, heck yeah, you guys. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here on Wednesday to talk about the episode Shooting Star. If you have thoughts on that episode that you would like to share with us, you can send them to recoveringgleek@gmail.com.
Love you all. Have a good week. Go spread some glee. Take heart. Take care of yourselves.
Yeah. It's over.
Truly. We're in the final days.
Hi, gay. Have a good rest of your day. Here's a mini kiss on your mini forehead. Live it up the next couple of days. Mwah.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Recovering Gleek. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at recoveringgleek_podcast. If you liked our podcast, be sure to leave a review. And tell your friends, please.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.